This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
You're listening to the Oddball Aussie Podcast with me, your host, Oz Oddball. During this episode, you may hear things that challenge your own beliefs, but please have an open mind and enjoy. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Aussie Oddball. And if you have any stories you want to share, send them to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome back to the Oddball Aussie Podcast. That's right, we're back with a new show. Been off for a little bit, but back again, feeling good. How has everyone else been out there? I hope you've all enjoyed that last episode, the new Oddball Files episodes. Really enjoyed making them, and if anyone is on Twitter, they would have seen the preview for tonight's episode, which tonight we're going to be talking about Roswell. Yes, that's right, the very mysterious and very controversial Roswell incident. A lot of different thoughts on this. I won't lie. You're probably going to hear a bit more of my skeptical side come out on this one. I do err on the side of skepticism when it comes to Roswell, only because of things that have come out of it since the actual event. So, to cover off a couple of things, we're going to talk about the actual incident in Roswell, not anything really new that came of it in modern times. We'll talk a few modern things, but for instance, there's the Roswell Stone, which a lot of you might know about, which is just a stone that they believe was found with a elaborate carving on the top that looks like a crop circle that was found in multiple places. Look, this thing's never been able to be verified. It strangely was never talked about until, you know, more recent years. So I'm not really going to include it. To me, I don't think there's enough information to really prove it was even ever there. And I think it's a hoax, to be quite frank. So if you do have anything that you think could clear that up, and maybe you've got some proof that the Roswell Stone is real, send it to me. Send me anything through the email, theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. And I'm happy to have a discussion with anyone. If anyone wants to come on the show and talk about why that stone is real or why some of the modern stuff surrounding it is real, I'd love to hear from you. Because, it could be enough that makes me go, ooh, I never thought about it that way. I began with Roswell as one of the very first alien encounters that I remember as a kid. One of the first ones I ever saw on TV or ever heard about in books. And I think that's the same for a lot of people, especially from my generation, that Roswell was that first one. And then when the internet came out, when the internet kicked off, it's crazy to think there was a time without the internet, isn't it? But when the internet kicked off, that's when we started getting these pictures of these autopsies being done of aliens. And that added more confusion to the story. And honestly, I'll tell you now, I remember seeing those alien autopsy videos. I must have been before I was a teenager. It had to have been before I was a teenager. So maybe about 12, I'm thinking. And it scared the hell out of me. I honestly thought it was real. And look, a lot of people still do think they're real. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. We'll cover that throughout the night as we discuss this. So hope you're all ready for this. And as I said, if you want to come on and discuss it, if you want to come on and try to prove anything that I say may be false tonight, send me an email, send me a message on Twitter. I always have my DMs open on Twitter, so I'm always up for a private message. So send them through. Always happy to have a discussion. Also, make sure that you check out the Tee Public store. Now, if you are going to buy something from the Tee Public store, there's so many things on there to buy. T-shirts and stickers and all sorts of things on there. Shower curtains, if you want a shower curtain for some reason. You can find a lot of good stuff on there. Check out the Tee Public site and type in the Oddball Aussie podcast and you'll find all of my content on there. Any of the money that I get from that goes straight back in the show, paying for the subscriptions and paying for any new equipment. So it is much, much appreciated when you do purchase anything from the store. If you are going to purchase something from the store, though, check it out next week. From the 13th onwards, they have a sale going on, and then there won't be another sale until the last week of April. And if you go on there last week of April, there's another sale they'll be on as well. So honestly, if you are going to buy something, wait till those sale times. Go and check it out. Get some cheap shirts and wear them. Show it off, and let's get some more people checking out the Oddball Aussie podcast. It'd be really, really great. If you're an Australian listener, please email me, and I can get you a link to getting the shirts at a cheaper rate when it comes to the shipping. Because right now, if you do buy from Tee Public, it is coming from America, and sometimes the shipping is more than the T-shirts, so be aware of that. But definitely, if you're in America, in Canada, or in Europe, the shirts, the shipping isn't very much at all. All right, now that I've spun that, let's get into the Roswell incident. So the Roswell incident is the 1947 recovery of balloon debris from a ranch near Corona, New Mexico by United States Air Force officers from Roswell Army Airfield. And this is believed to be a UFO crash site, not a balloon crash. But we've got two sides to this. So one side being the government and the other side being the true believers. The government says it was a weather balloon and it was just part of a test. They were going out there testing the weather balloons, making sure, see what's going on up in the sky, I guess. And it was just a conventional weather balloon. Others say, no, it can't be. It was an alien spacecraft and it was taken away and hidden away from us and taken into Area 51. So the Roswell incident caused a bit of a stir in the 40s, but really wasn't spoken about again until about the late 70s when retired Lieutenant Colonel Jesse Marcel, in an interview with ufologist Stanton Friedman, said he believed the debris he retrieved was extraterrestrial. Ufologists began promoting a variety of increasingly elaborate conspiracy theories, claiming that one or more alien spacecraft had crash-landed and that the extraterrestrial occupants had been recovered by the military, which then engaged in a cover-up. This also goes on that there was a second crash, and the second crash, the alien actually escaped. There's also people who believe in the first crash that alien was found alive, and that a live alien was kept in Area 51 until it passed away. Only a few years ago, apparently, according to some researchers out there. They believe the alien was called Eba, and Eba was a guest here, didn't want to leave. Basically, almost the same premise as Paul. And they sat here and they taught us all this stuff, and this is why our internet was created. This is why our technology jumped through the roof come late 80s and early 90s, and things just are getting really much faster. But there's no real rock-solid evidence for this. There's no interviews with this so-called Eba. There's people who have come out saying that they've worked on the site. Many of them, though, when you go through their records, they've never been anywhere near that site, or they're people who would not have had the security access to even get close to things like this. So it's really difficult to weed out who's who in the zoo. And so what we're going to do is we'll name names of people who really come forward that something might be there. So someone like Jesse Marcel, the Lieutenant Colonel, he really did think that what they were cleaning up was not of a normal material that we have on Earth. He believed that it was definitely extraterrestrial. In saying that, the stuff they were using for the time may have seemed a bit science fiction, because it does look very different to anything that a standard aircraft pilot or anyone, any officer who has been around aerial vehicles would have ever seen. So things sort of would bounce around and people would talk about it. Ufologists would go nuts over the story. And then in 1994, the United States Air Force published a report identifying the crashed object as a nuclear test surveillance balloon from Project Mogul. A second Air Force report published in 1997 concluded that the stories of alien bodies probably stemmed from test dummies being dropped from high altitude. So again, every time one of these comes out, people say that they can't trust what the government has told them. So they just go down the road of, well, of course I'd say that. And then the government really against themselves are just doing the exact same thing to the true believers. So the government comes out and goes, of course they would say it's we said that it was test dummies. So it's really, really hard between the two of them. It's like trying to talk to a couple of neighbors who have been arguing for decades about a fence and then asking them who started the fight. Both sides adamantly are saying that the other side is lying or is making things up. And look, somewhere in the middle there, there's probably the truth. So the winner out of all this, though, was Roswell, New Mexico, the city of Roswell. They capitalized on it, and they've had events. They have all sorts of memorabilia you can buy there. They have a statue there with a giant green alien. The city's official seal now features a little green man, while the city contains countless ufology attractions, events, statues, and iconography. So it's really become a hub where people go to stay when they're on the trail to Area 51, the Black Mailbox, which, you know, we're going to talk about them in future episodes. We won't go ahead of ourselves. Roswell, New Mexico has really just gone, you know what? We're going to own this. And really all of Lincoln County in New Mexico, all of Lincoln County has just jumped on board with this. And you've got, you know, alien-themed hotels and stuff like that that you can stay in. You've got alien-themed restaurants and cafes and or diners, I guess you call them over there. And it's just crazy. Really interesting, and it's really great. And this sort of ties in similar to what we talked about last episode with the Mothman. Towns that take advantage of that and just go, you know what, we're going to own this. We're going to make this our thing. I love that. I think that's so cool. I think it's so progressive and forward thinking of the town council and mayor, especially when you consider, when I can compare it to areas I've lived in, where if the public came out saying things like this, it would be quickly, even if they didn't believe it, even if they did believe it, doesn't matter. They would just go, nah, we're not talking about this. Let's cover it up. And if anyone goes out to that area where they saw a ghost or they saw an alien, they saw a Bigfoot or something, we're just going to send police out there to tell them to get off that area of land, even if it's public land. It's really interesting when you see towns that just take hold of it. And there's a few good towns in Australia, when we talk about Bigfoot and Yowie, that have actually taken on that persona. And Roswell is one with one in America that comes from that alien side. So really cool to see. So the events of July 1947, Roswell incident occurred amid the flying saucer craze of 1947. And look, there was a big craze at that time. If you look at the reportings of UFOs, there was a massive amount of hysteria around UFOs around the 40s, around the late 40s. Look, this could be genuine UFO reports. It could be genuine things. It could also be a lot of competition coming out of Russia. It could be a lot of competition coming out of China for aerial craft that just couldn't be identified at the time. It also could have been American-owned craft as well. We know that after this, we saw the stealth bombers eventually showed themselves. There's so many different aircraft that had eventually come out of Area 51, and we found out that's where Lockheed Martin were actually building those aircraft. So, I think there's a lot to be said for maybe it could have been man-made. But again, a lot of people were also reporting abductions during the 40s and 50s, and it would only get bigger from there. And then into a dip, and then eventually we're seeing again now reports skyrocketing. So potentially, maybe it's all connected. So on Saturday night, July the 5th, 1947, rancher W.W. Mack Brazel, made a trip from his remote ranch to town, Corona, New Mexico. The ranch had no phone and no radio, leaving Brazel unaware of the flying saucer craze of the prior 10 days. So, 10 days, this farmer, he's been out there doing his thing, and he just, hadn't heard anything. Bad reception, wasn't going to get anything through, and, hadn't heard any of the stories of this crash or these lights in the sky. There was also a civilian pilot called Kenneth Arnold who told a story of seeing the flying saucers and would later chronicle. The newspapers would later get 800 copycat sightings that were reported after the Arnold story was published. So there was probably some truth to that there was something seen in the sky. Of course there was. But as in regards to Mac, as a result, it was not until Saturday night that Brazel connected debris he had found 3 weeks earlier with the flying discs in the news. The debris, tinfoil, rubber, and thin wooden beams had been scattered across a square mile of the ranch. Brazel previously had gathered it and pushed it under some brush to dispose of it. Now, this is where it gets a little bit contentious as well, because the government says it was rubber, tinfoil, and thin wooden beams. There was stories that when Brazel was first talking about this to people, that he said there was no wood and that it was a strange metal. It was a strange metal that was really hard and really strong, but very pliable. You could bend it, you could shape it. He had never seen anything like this before. But rubber and thin wood had not been mentioned. So one side says it was tinfoil, rubber, and thin wooden beams, all parts of a normal weather balloon. And the other side says, no, you've added that in there to muddy the waters. So when Brazel heard stories of silvery flying discs that Saturday night in Corona, he decided to gather up his prior find on Sunday, July 6th. Brazel dug out the debris on Monday, July the 7th. He took it into the sheriff's office in Roswell. The sheriff called Roswell Army Airfield, which assigned the matter to Major Jesse Marcel. Brazel took Marcel back to the debris site, and the two gathered up more pieces of rubber and tinfoil. Marcel took the material home on Monday night. On Tuesday morning, July the 8th, Marcel took the material to his base commander, Colonel William Blanchard. Blanchard reported the finding to General Roger Ramey at Fort Worth Army Airfield, FWAAF. General Ramey ordered the material flown to FWAAF immediately. Marcel boarded a B-29 Super Fortress and made the flight to FWAAF. On July the 8th, 1947, the RAAF Public Information Officer Walter Hort issued a press release stating that the personnel from the field's 509th Operation Group had recovered a flying disc which had landed on a ranch near Roswell. So this is where it gets juicy. This is where it gets spicy, because people read this press release, and why would he pick words like flying disc? That's admittedly, even for someone who is, I don't believe everything to do with Roswell, that is something that has always stood out to me. Why someone in such a high command would make that mistake. But then we need to take into account the time. I mean, nowadays, no one would be so brazen to say something like that. Back then, maybe he just didn't think about what he was saying because, he's been recovering stuff like this for years after the war. Maybe he was just referring to the shape that they found on the ground, and a weather balloon technically would be a disc when flattened out on the ground. Not only that, we'll talk more about the weather balloons shortly, but there's a lot of disc-like objects around them as well. So I can see why they would say that. But at the same time, the man who took that home, Jesse Marcel, being a major, again, another high-ranking officer, he said that he didn't think this material was man-made and he had it in his home. So that's, again, very, very interesting. He had it overnight. He had looked at it. He had checked it over. But nothing was really found of it. The many rumors regarding the flying disc became reality yesterday when the intelligence officer of the 509th Bomb Group of the 8th Air Force Roswell Army Field was fortunate enough to gain possession of a disc through the cooperation of one of the local ranchers and the sheriff's office of Chavez County. The flying object landed on a ranch near Roswell sometime last week. Not having phone facilities, the rancher stored the disc until such time as he was able to contact the sheriff's office, who in turn notified Major Jesse A. Marcel of the 509th Bomb Group Intelligence Office. Action was immediately taken, and the disc was picked up at the rancher's home. It was inspected at the Roswell Army Field and subsequently loaned by Major Marcel to higher headquarters. All right, so as soon as Marcel brought the material to General Ramey's office, both Ramey and his chief of staff, Colonel Thomas Dubois, identified the material as pieces of a weather balloon kite. So these are called Raywind devices and were used at about 80 weather stations across the country. The balloons were attached to a six-pointed reflective device that looked like a silver star. After launch, the balloon expanded with increasing altitude before bursting around 60,000 feet, with pieces then dispersing in their fall to the ground. As described in July 9th, 1947 edition of the Roswell Daily Record, it went on to say the balloon which held it up, if that was how it worked, must have been 12 feet, 3.5 meters long. Brazel felt measuring the distance by the size of the room in which he sat. The rubber was smoky gray in color and scattered over an area of about 200 yards, 180 meters in diameter. When the debris was gathered up, the tinfoil, paper, tape, and sticks made a bundle of about 1 meter long and 7 or 8 inches or 18 or 20 centimeters thick, while the rubber made a bundle about 18 or 20 inches, which is 45 or 50 centimeters long, and about 8 inches or 20 centimeters thick. In all, he estimated the entire lot would have weighed maybe about 5 pounds, so about 2 kilos. There was no sign of any metal in the area, which may have been used for an engine, and no sign of propellers of any kind, although at least one paper fin had been glued onto some of the tinfoil. There were no words to be found anywhere on the instrument, although there were letters on some parts. Considerable Scotch tape and some tape with flowers printed upon it had been used in the construction. So I'm guessing the boys in the FWAC, it's a mouthful, ran out of tape, and one of them's got some tape from their daughter's classroom or something, and I don't know what's happened there, but they've used some flowery tape on it as well. So no strings or wires were to be found, and there were some eyelets in the paper to indicate that some sort of attachment may have been used. The eyelets as well, though, in a modern eye, the eyelets could have also been for airflow. It just depends on whatever the scientists were trying to test. So Brazel, look, nothing against the man, but being a rancher, had barely seen anything in the way of aircraft, had barely seen anything other than his farming equipment and what he had. Remember, no internet. Brazel was never self-proclaimed. He didn't think this was going to be as big as what it turned out to be. And, in future, he would go on to say that, I think people took things I was saying out of context. But again, a lot of people say that he was paid off or that he was well looked after this happened. So it was also stated that there was no metal found, even though the government had said that it was a metallic disc. Metallic only refers to the color, but a lot of people believe that's another cover-up, that there was an engine, there was a whole craft, and that these weather balloon parts were just swapped out. And this was a fabricated story to try and cover up. So swamp gas type story, try and cover up what actually happened. So after the initial newspaper reports of 1947, Roswell incident faded from public attention for about 30 years. When interest re-emerged in the 70s, the Roswell incident was featured in films, TV shows, and books amid increasingly complex conspiracy theories. Multiple hoaxes and legends about alien bodies were incorporated into the Roswell mythos. The trend culminated in 1995's reported footage of alien autopsy, which filmmakers later revealed to be a hoax, though they preferred the term reconstruction. So that sort of sums up to Roswell from then until the 90s. Now, let's talk about Roswell further on. So this is where it gets even more interesting. We had the Hort document. In 2007, Donald Schmidt and Tom Carey published the books Witness to Roswell, which prominently featured a document said to be a sworn affidavit by Walter Hort, who had written the First Army press release about the Roswell crash in 1947. So it was allegedly been left by Hort and opened only after his death in 2005. It includes a description of the 47 crash debris having been discussed by high-ranking staff and how Hort had seen alien bodies. The claims, however, drew an unimpressed response even from ufologist Dennis Balthazar, said that the document was not written by Hort and that by 2000 Hort's mental state was such that he could not recall basic details about his past. So he had suffered cognitive issues quite badly. So on October 26, 2007, Bill Richardson, who at the time was a candidate for the Democratic Party nomination for US president, was asked about the releasing government files on Roswell. Richardson responded that when he was a congressman, he attempted to get information on behalf of his New Mexico constituents, but was told by both the Department of Defense and the Los Alamos Labs that the information was classified. That ticked me off, he said. The government doesn't tell the truth as much as it should on a lot of issues. He promised to work on opening the files if he were elected president. So, look, we hear this all the time. Every president that's come through has said that they're going to open up the files. Hillary tried to say that she was going to open up the files, but seriously, if someone was going to, it would have been her husband back when he was in, but even he couldn't do it. So I think there's certain things that presidents just don't have the power to do. And I think opening up all the files in Area 51 is one of them, especially when we consider that it's Los Alamos Labs that's getting a say in this as well. We got to think Los Alamos Labs, you've got a lot of government defense contracts being pumped through there. You know, we're talking everything from drones to missiles to anything else that's ballistic, anything that's going to be flown or in the air, anything that's ground to air or air to ground is going to be researched in there. So they don't want anything being leaked that could connect them or could lead people to know what they're working on next. The other thing is, it's most likely, it's probably pretty... I think you could call it likely, if not confirmed, that they had probably done some damage to some ecosystems during their testing. They had probably damaged some land around that area where Area 51 is supposedly hides. I could imagine if we found out some of what's been leaked into the soil, into the waterways, into the air, I don't think people around the Roswell area would be too happy to find out. You've only got to see what's been leaked in the air when they've tested just short-range missiles and things like that. Yeah, I think there's a lot more than just aliens that's been covered up there, that's for sure. So jumping forward to 2011, we've got the Stalin-Mengele conspiracy theory. In 2011, American journalist Annie Jacobson, Area 51, an uncensored history of America's top secret military base, featured a claim that Joseph Mengele, a German SS soldier, officer, and a doctor in Auschwitz, was recruited by Soviet leader Joseph Stalin to produce grotesque child-sized aviators to remotely pilot and land in America in order to cause hysteria, similar to Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. So the theory suggests that this was a enemy aircraft being flown by one of these miniature pilots that Joseph Stalin had created. And there was nothing alien involved at all. And this was actually a test subject just doing their job. Again, nothing to really back this up. It's a claim, but there's nothing to show. A lot of Mengele's labs were pulled apart after the war. We found some really fucked up stuff, but none of it was really feasible. Nothing that was really working that we know of anyway. But I guess if the government wanted to cover it up, it'd cover it up, wouldn't it? And then 2017 to 2020, we've still had people trying to debunk it. There's still groups out there trying to say that this is true. Still groups out there trying to debunk it. In February 2020, an Air Force historian revealed a recently declassified report of a circa 1951 incident in which two Roswell personnel donned poorly fitting radioactive suits complete with oxygen masks while retrieving a weather balloon after an atomic test. On one occasion, they encountered a lone woman in the desert who fainted when she saw them. The personnel could have appeared to someone unaccustomed to the then modern gear to be an alien. Very true. I have done training in this sort of equipment before, and you look like an alien. You look like a big minion type thing. It's especially if you've got to give yourself a bit of air inside your suit. Yeah, let a little bit of air into the suit to cool yourself down, and you puff up like a big balloon. So I can understand where a woman might be, or anyone who's wandering the desert, or anyone who's out in the desert doing something, and they just see these two giant beings in these suits, especially in a time where you had no internet, time where you had no, this wasn't stuff that was being reported. People probably didn't even really think these suits existed. These are fairly new tech. So it's very interesting, isn't it? That's pretty much from 47 until now. But it still keeps going. People still believe that something happened, that something was covered up. So the Air Force released a special report. In 94, the Office of the Secretary of the Air Force concluded an exhaustive search for records in response to a General Accounting Office, GAO, inquiry of an event popularly known as the Roswell Incident. The focus of the GAO probe, initiated at the request of a member of Congress, was to determine if the U.S. Air Force or any other U.S. government agency possessed the information on the alleged crash and recovering of an extraterrestrial vehicle and its alien occupants near Roswell, NM, in July 1947. The report concluded that the predecessor to the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Army Air Forces, recovered debris from an Army Air Force balloon-borne research project codenamed Mogul. So it found nothing else other than what they had already reported. This report discusses the result of this exhaustive research and identifies a likely source of the claims of alien bodies at Roswell. Contrary to the allegations, many of the accounts appear to be descriptions of unclassified and widely publicized Air Force scientific achievements. Other descriptions of bodies appear to be actual incidents in which Air Force members were killed or injured in the line of duty. So, yes, potentially, people did see bodies getting dragged out of a vehicle. It was more than likely their own pilots. We also did see people picking up what looked like dead people in the desert. Most likely, this was crash test dummies being dropped from the air, testing different parachutes, different uniforms, testing different rigs, lots of different things that you'd use for a crash test dummy. Trying to figure out what the impact speed is. There's a lot of things they would have been testing that they couldn't test prior to the war. Now, got to remember, during the war, a lot of testing was put to the side so that they get the equipment out to the soldiers. After the war, they finally have a breather And they've also got, they've won the war, so they've got a lot more funding coming from private citizens and everything. So now they can do proper testing on things, and they can start to create better and more elaborate technology. And that's more than likely why a technology boomed, was a result of post-war rather than some alien giving us tech. So the aliens that were observed in the New Mexico desert were actually anthropomorphic test dummies that were carried aloft by U.S. Air Force high-altitude balloons in scientific research. The unusual military activities in the New Mexico desert were high-altitude research balloons, launch and recovery operations. Reports of military units that always seemed to arrive shortly after the crash of a flying saucer to retrieve the saucer and crew were actually accurate descriptions of Air Force personnel engaged in anthropomorphic dummy recovery operations. So, yeah, they're out there. They've got to recover the data. The data's inside the dummy, so that's where they go. So I will link in the description below of this, the Roswell report. And this is the exact same report that was, I mean, it's been jazzed up a bit, I believe, but the actual writing in it is the exact same report from 1994. So have a look through it. It's very interesting, but it doesn't really prove anything to do with aliens. The all right, so let's move on to these bodies. Let's talk about these alien bodies. So they believe that they found a Roswell survivor and the truth about the one that walked away. So in 1947, Frankie Dwyer Rowe, a 12-year-old girl, witnessed her father being threatened and warned by the military authorities for what he saw at the Roswell crash site. Her father, now deceased, was a crew chief for the Roswell Fire Department at the time of the incident. When the call came into the fire station that there had been an airship crash north of town, Dan Dwyer and Lee Reeves were dispatched with the station's tanker, a pickup truck with a large cylindrical water tank in the back, to the crash site. The Chavez County Sheriff and a couple of his deputies were also following up the rear in fast pursuit. Arriving just before the military would secure the scene, Dwyer and Reeves witnessed something totally unexpected. It wasn't an airplane, but an egg-shaped vessel of some sort they did not recognize. And the bodies. Dwyer could see three diminutive human beings lying within in the lee of the craft, with his focus riveted on the craft and the bodies on the ground. Dwyer noticed movement out of the corner of his eye. There, walking in front of him, seemingly out of nowhere, was something right out of a science fiction novel. According to the fireman, it was about the size of a 10-year-old child, with grayish skin, no hair, and large head and eyes. Within moments, the roar of approaching vehicles could be heard as the military finally took charge of the entire affair. The two firemen were escorted away from the immediate area and warned of the consequences if they should ever speak of the incident. To further demonstrate the seriousness of what was witnessed, Dwyer and his family were paid a visit by the military police, and in their home. Dwyer and his wife were physically threatened and were told that the authorities would kill their children should they utter a word about what was witnessed earlier that day. So, pretty full-on stuff. Whether this is true or not, we're not too sure, but it's definitely claimed by the daughter of Dan Dwyer. A few other people would make an appearance in here. George Wilcox, the Roswell incident left an impact on all who were involved. Just before George Wilcox's widow, Inez, passed away, she related a story to her granddaughter, Barbara, who since passed on the story. In her words, the event shocked George. He never wanted to be a sheriff ever again after that. My grandmother said, "Don't tell anybody when the incident happened. The military police came to the jailhouse and told George that if we were ever told anything about the incident, not only could we be killed, but our entire family would be killed," Barbara adds. "They called my grandfather, and someone came and told him about the crash. He went out there to the site. There was a big burned area, and he saw debris. There were four space beings. Their heads were large. They wore suits like silk. One of the little men was alive." Inez Wilcox reiterated to Barbara that her and George took the threats very seriously and kept information from the family. Again, another fairly well-known person in town. So now we've got a fire chief and we've got a chief of police who both saying that their families are threatened. So it does get interesting with that. We also had Master Sergeant Harry Telesco. Harry Telesco had already passed away in 2007. According to his daughter, her late father had spoken many years ago of being at the crash site north of town and being the strange wreckage little bodies there. He also testified they had seen that one was still alive. And this information is coming from openminds.com or openminds.tv rather. So, again, I believe what they're writing here is what they've researched, what they've found, and I can't say anything against them for that. But sometimes you've got to think about why weren't any of these stories told by the people while they were still alive? I believe, yep, they would have been afraid for their families' lives. If this was real, if that part is true, then that's definitely enough to scare a person to not want to say anything. So, yeah, I can follow that for sure. We also had Miriam Bush and her sister-in-law, Pat Bush. They were both working in the hospital, and they both claimed that they saw the bodies of the aliens in the RAAF base hospital. And what became of that surviving alien? To date, no one's really come up to with a good reason as to where it went or who took it or if it just disappeared. However, that being said, there's a lot of people who do have speculations that it went on to live a normal life and talk to the government and work with the government. Others say that it was picked up a few weeks later by another ship that they saw come in. Lieutenant Colonel Marion Magruder, highly decorated World War II flying ace, swore to his five sons that while with the War College, he was assigned to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in April 1948 and allowed to briefly see the live alien at the time. He and the others in his company were instructed that the being was recovered from the crash in Roswell just the year before. His description was similar to all the other eyewitnesses. He emphasized that there was no question that it came from another planet. As one of the personnel at the RAAF once remarked, they sure weren't from Texas, and in the same vein, they weren't from Japan, Germany, or anywhere else on Earth. That is one issue all the witnesses remain unanimous on. So yeah, there's quite a list of witnesses here that did see and did take part in it. So it is quite interesting, and I'll have a link to their article in the notes below as well. So what about these bodies? Well, we've had two videos that have been released to us of these bodies. One you'll see if you're on Twitter or Instagram, you'll see on the image I'm going to put up again. It's in the collage of little things I've done for the show. It's of the gray alien laying on the silver bench. It's all in black and white, so I'm guessing it's silver bench. And they're doing an autopsy on it. That's one that we saw. The people who made that did come out and they said it was a hoax. Well, they didn't call it a hoax because they genuinely believe it happened. So they called it a recreation. They say that they saw the original. They know what they saw and they're remaking it from what they saw. The second photo that we saw of an alien body was bounced around the late 90s, early 2000s. I really think it made its prominence early 2000s. And it was of a mummified or skeleton-like tiny humanoid being. And it was sort of the lighting was twisted on it, so it was in a blue lighting. And it's made to look real, spookily boogily. It turns out, though, that this whole image is completely false. This particular image is actually one of a 12-year-old mummy that was found in Egypt. And people have just twisted the photo and have just made it look like something that probably came out of Roswell. Not true, not from Area 51, not from Roswell, not even from America, not even from that time. This is the problem, is that with Roswell, there's so many people jumping on the bandwagon, so many people who are adamant that something still happened. As much I do enjoy watching Nick Pope's things, I do think some of his stuff that comes out is interesting. But Nick Pope's one is someone who does pop up quite a bit around the Roswell incident, at their talks they have every year and things like that. I believe there's another one coming up this year that he's going to be at. I think Ben Hansen's going to be there. I'm just having a look. Mike Barra, a few people. Melissa Tiedel. So there's a few people that are going to be there at this talk. Again, look, if they believe it, and I'm open to anyone showing me some facts that might change my mind. But I'm not a skeptic on all these things. I'm not a hardcore skeptic by any means. But the issue I'm seeing is even the original photos of Major Jesse Marcel, if that is a genuine photo, I myself can see in this photo of Jesse holding the tinfoil. I can see it's tinfoil. I can see the rods on the ground. I can even see a bit of the rubber there. So to me, yeah, that's case closed. But if we go down the rabbit hole, if we believe that it is this is all made up, this image that we see was fabricated for, you know, used to cover up what actually happened, then okay, they've done a really good job of that. So it's hard to sort of really separate sometimes. But there's always going to be things that don't add up. The Air Force saying, or the Army saying, that the wreckage was a flying disc. That's still one that sits in people's minds that makes people go, I don't know about this. I don't think it was a weather balloon. The next one is that people actually saw a flying disc the night and nights leading up to it. Another really interesting thing is that people saw, there was reports of UFOs the day before and the week up to, I think it was about a month before the crash, people had seen these flying saucers. Around about 10 p.m. most nights, people would notice these flying objects, and then some people would see them during the day as well. So that's where people sort of go, okay, I believe there was something there, and I think the government covered it up. So also the thing that got people was how quickly the story changed. We went from a weather balloon to a disc to a weather balloon, to a disc, it just rapidly kept on changing. Then all of a sudden from the disc, we had the photos, obviously, as I said, of Jesse Marcel there, and he's holding onto this thing, and he's making out, you know, it's just a weather balloon, but would later on come out to say he believed it was extraterrestrial. So why would he say that? Because at the time he was working for the Air Force, so of course he would say that. There was a radio interview as well. 1947, the radio was a key way of staying in touch with the community. Radio news was the most up-to-date news available and widely believed by its listeners. So it was important to anyone who was trying to control the spread of information to have control of the radio. So the rancher Mac had actually gone and done an interview with KGFL. He went and did the interview, and after his interview, which was recorded to be played the next day, the military police reportedly arrived and told KGFL staff that they were authorized by the Federal Communications Commission to confiscate the tape as a matter of national security, words that had strong meaning only 2 years after the end of World War II. They also confiscated Mac and later returned him so that he could give the radio station a truthful interview about what he had found near the sheep. And mind you, when Mac had returned, his story had changed as well, according to the people at KGFL. And they got actually quite angry about this, that he was telling such a different story. And look, if they were threatening people's lives, if they were threatening to kill people's families, maybe this was enough to spook Mac and go, yeah, no, I'm not messing with that. The rancher Mac Brazil, he was also held by the government. Now, someone who just finds wreckage doesn't normally get held overnight by the government. This isn't normal things, treated like a prisoner. So for a week, rather, he was put in jail for. Very interesting. Why would you keep a farmer in a ranch in jail for a week? Again, it was just after World War II, so maybe tensions were high. Maybe people were still trying to make sure there was no spies or anything out there. I can get that, but it's quite interesting nonetheless. There's a lot of different stories here. Sergeant Frederick Benthill was a specialist photographer in a time where such things were a necessity. Cameras were a complex piece of machinery in the 1940s, and a certain amount of more expertise was needed than today's point-and-shoot smartphones and filters. So Sergeant Benthill was flown to Roswell from Washington, D.C., and taken in an ambulance to a crash site. He was allegedly taken to a tent and told to walk around the tent, taking photos of bodies that were lying there. Even though he was apparently instructed not to look, which would make focusing the lens hard, he did, of course, see what he was photographing with small, spindly bodies only about 4 foot high, the bulbous heads and big eyes. After he'd done the task, his camera was confiscated. Sergeant Benthill spent a large part of the rest of his military career stationed in the Arctic, photographing the events of extreme cold on military equipment. So, yeah, that's very interesting. Sending him somewhere where really couldn't talk to anyone. There's also suggestions that witnesses have been offed by the government, have been killed by the government. And of course, there's a couple of local stories that came out as well. A sheet metal technician was called to the crash site. Why would they need that if it's only tinfoil? There was also a local mortician that was told to give embalming advice over the phone. Again, why? Very, very interesting. And look, any information coming in and out of Roswell was being suppressed. Mail took a hit. It was slowing down. People's mail was being checked. The radio was being listened to. You know, people were being cautioned left, right, and center about saying things that they didn't actually see. So all very, very interesting stuff. Again, it's not enough for me to just sit here and go, yep, I believe Roswell. I believe it was an alien crash. I believe the government probably covered something up. I believe something happened. I believe it was probably more than a weather balloon. But I don't necessarily believe that it was aliens. It's just there's too many people who have muddied the waters, and this is always my issue with things. And we're going a bit longer tonight. Normally I like to keep these episodes a bit short, but for some reason I just haven't been able to stop. There is always so much information around what Roswell, and to be honest with you, I could do another hour on this, but we'd just be starting to go back in a full circle again anyway. So this has been the baseline facts, where it started, where it is now, and what happened in between. So I hope you enjoyed listening to this. I hope this was enough to spark your interest. If you're someone who's been into the ufology in the past, or someone who's looking at getting into it now, this is a great jumping off point, and this is a really interesting story. So regardless of whether it's true, false, or somewhere in between, it's always interesting to check these things out. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being on board. As I said, if you've got something you want to share with me that might sway what I think, or you think there's something I've never seen or never heard before, please send it to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com, and also send it to my Twitter @AussieOddball. And look, I'm always on the Twitter. I'm probably on the Twitter more than I am on my emails, to be honest, but send it to both. And I'd love to hear from you all. If you are someone who's an expert in this field around Roswell, I'd love to have you on the show and have a discussion. Look, I'm not up for debating anyone. I'm not that heated when it comes to this type of stuff. I'd just love to know more about it. And I'd love to see some more stronger evidence in the way that it was aliens and not just some unknown craft. But hopefully someone can provide me with some more information. All right. So hopefully you all have a great night. You all enjoyed this, and I'll be talking to you all very soon. We'll have another one of the Oddball Files coming out shortly, and hopefully we'll have a bigger story coming out too. Maybe a big two or three parter around talking about cults and things like that. It's a big one I'm working on. I've also got some interviews lined up, so the interviews will be very, very interesting. Looking forward to them. And yeah, but for now, we'll just keep on plugging out these Oddball File episodes. I think I got a really, really good feedback on the first one. So I hope you all enjoyed this one. But yeah, for now, I'll sign off. Look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.